So we're going to continue in our study through Genesis. So if you don't mind turning to Genesis chapter 46. We're going to continue where we left off in chapter 45. Joseph has now revealed himself to his brothers, and the beautiful picture of Joseph falling upon their necks and embracing them is shown in verses 14 to 15. The brothers were then given provisions, given clothes, wagons, and beasts. And their instructions were clear: bring back Jacob to Egypt that they may be provided for, as there's still 5 years left to this famine. Now, when they returned to the land of Canaan, they told their father, "Joseph is still alive and he is ruler over all the land of Egypt." And how did Jacob respond? It is said his heart became numb, for he did not believe them. You can imagine this 20 plus years Jacob had gone through, thinking Joseph had died, mourning his son from his most beloved wife, Rachel. The utter denial of the fact, like, Joseph cannot be alive. I could not mourn him for 20 years and he's still alive. But the boys told him, in fact, Joseph is alive and he is in Egypt ruling over all the land. And the reason he's in Egypt is because we sold him to Egypt. And the shock and denial must have been the first thing to go through Jacob's mind. The lies that were told, the cover-ups that happened. However, as Jacob saw the wagons approaching, his spirit revived within him. And in verse 28, Israel says, "It is enough. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die." And this is where we pick up. Genesis 46, beginning with verse 1. So Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. And God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, "Jacob, Jacob." And he said, "Here I am." Then he said, "I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I'll make you into a great nation. I myself will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also bring you up again. And Joseph's hand shall close your eyes." Then Jacob set out from Beersheba. The sons of Israel carried Jacob, their father, their little ones, and their wives, and the wagons that Pharaoh had sent to carry him. They also took their livestock and their goods, which they had gained in the land of Canaan, and came into Egypt. Jacob and all his offspring with him, and his sons' sons with him, his daughters and his sons' daughters. All his offspring he brought with him into Egypt. Now these are the names of the descendants of Israel who came into Egypt: Jacob and his sons, Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, and the sons of Reuben, Hanok, Palul, Hezron, and Carmi. The sons of Simeon, Jemuel, Jamin, Ohad, Jachin, Zohar, and Shaul. The sons of a Canaanite woman. The sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. The sons of Judah, Onan, Shelah, Perez, and Zerah. But and Onan died in the land of Canaan. And the sons of Perez were Hezron and Hamul. The sons of Issachar, Tola, Puva, Yab, and Shimron. The sons of Zebulun, Zahrad, Elon, and Jalaliel. These are the sons of Leah, who she bore to Jacob in Padanaram, together with his daughters Dinah. Altogether, his sons and his daughters numbered 33. The sons of Gad, Ziphon, Haggai, Shini, Esbron, Uri, Odori, Erali. The sons of Asher, Imnah, Ishva, Ishvi, Bera, with Sarah, their sister. And the sons of Barai, Heber, and Machaliel. These are the sons of Zilpha, whom Laban gave to Leah his daughter. And these she bore to Jacob 16 persons. The sons of Rachel, Jacob's wives, Joseph and Benjamin. And to Joseph in the land of Egypt were born Manasseh and Ephraim, who Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On, bore to him. And the sons of Benjamin, Bela, Becher, Ashbel, Gera, Naaman, Ehi, Rosh, Muppim, Huppim, and Ard. These are the sons of Rachel who were born to Jacob, 14 persons in all. The sons of Dan, Husham. The sons of Naphtali, Jaziel, Juni, Jezer, and Shalim. These are the sons of Bilhah, whom Laban gave to Rachel, his daughter, that she bore to Jacob, 7 persons in all. All the persons belonging to Jacob who came into Egypt, who were in his own descendants, not including Jacob's sons' wives, were 66 persons in all. All the sons of Joseph who were born to him in Egypt were 2. All the persons of the household of Jacob came into Egypt were 70. He had sent Judah ahead of him to Joseph to show the way before him in Goshen. And they came into the land of Goshen. Then Joseph prepared his chariot and went up to meet Israel, his father, in Goshen. He presented himself to him and fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good while. And Israel said to Joseph, "Now let me die, since I have seen your face and know that you are still alive." Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, "I will go up and tell Pharaoh and will say to him, 'My brothers and my father's household who are in the land of Canaan have come to me. And the men are shepherds, for they have been keepers of livestock, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have. When Pharaoh calls you and says, "What is your occupation?" you shall say, "Your servants have become keepers of livestock from our youth even until now, both we and our fathers, in order that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians." So, back to verse 1. Israel took his journey with all that he has. Now, although this is Israel or Jacob and his family voyaging towards Egypt, I believe this is a much bigger scale than just his family. I think this is Israel as a nation, God's people leaving the land of Canaan and going into a foreign land of Egypt for a time. Now, it seems as if their journey starts here in Hebron. If you look back to chapter 34, Jacob is wondering what is going on with the boys in Shechem. He's asking Joseph to go and investigate and check on them. And in verse 14, it states, "So he sent him from the valley of Hebron and he came to Shechem." Now, the only reason I took us on that short departure to get an understanding of where they're at right now in Hebron is because as they're leaving Hebron on the way to Egypt, Beersheba is going to be right in the middle. So as they're leaving, as they're departing, as they're going forth towards Egypt, as they're doing their voyage, Beersheba's right there. And I don't think this is by happen chance that Beersheba was in their path line. Jacob understood his father and the things that happened to him at Beersheba. And more importantly, God had placed this time for Beersheba to be there because Jacob needed this time with God alone. In Genesis 26, 23 to 25, we hear of Isaac and his meeting with God. And it says, "From there he went up to Beersheba," that being Isaac. "And the Lord appeared to him the same night and said, 'I am the God of Abraham, your father. Fear not, for I am with you and will bless you and multiply your offspring for my servant Abraham's sake.' So he built an altar there and called upon the name of the Lord and pitched his tent there. And there Isaac's servants dug a well." So Jacob must have heard stories from his father of this place. This time where he met with God, this time where he was alone with God, this time where God called upon his name. And Jacob, understanding this, comes forward to Beersheba and offers a sacrifice. He offers a sacrifice for what purpose? Well, if we go back to verse chapter 28, turn with me to chapter 28, what Ed read us this morning. There'd be a reason why Jacob comes to Beersheba, because he might have a conflict of heart here. In Genesis 28, 10 to 17, we see Jacob's dream, and we see Jacob left Beersheba and went towards Haran, and we see that he had a certain place and he went through, but at a certain point here, we see the Lord speak to Jacob. And in verse 13, it says, "And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, 'I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your offspring. Your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad the west to the east and to the north and to the south. And in you and in your offspring shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land.'" Now we see there's promises made here in Genesis 28 from the Lord to Jacob. Promises that will be fulfilled, but are not quite fulfilled yet. And God calls for what? Him in this land. And what is Jacob doing? Jacob's leaving this land. This land that God promised to him in chapter 28, Jacob is now leaving to go to Egypt. Not just Egypt, a foreign land, but a foreign land that doesn't necessarily take kindly to Hebrews. So he's saying, "God, I'm leaving this place which you promised me. I'm leaving this place and now I'm going to a place where they don't like us at all. We might be killed. Is this a part of your will? Is this a part of your plan? I don't know." So you can imagine why this might be a big leap of faith for Jacob, thinking, am I straying from God's way? So he offers a sacrifice here in 46. He offers a sacrifice, and God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here am I. Then he said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will make you into a great nation. I myself will go down with you again, and Joseph's hand shall close your eyes. Now there's a cool translation here for the first writing of God. So when God first speaks to Israel in this vision, the translation is Ha-El, or strong one. So basically God, as he is starting out this vision to Jacob, makes it very apparent to him, I'm the strong one. I know you're about to be fearful. We know that Jacob has some sort of fear because God addresses it in a couple verses. And all we see here in the beginning verses is, I'm strong. There's no reason to fret. There's no reason to worry. There's no reason to be fearful. I am here. Yes, you're weak, but I'm strong. This is how God addresses him in this first time. Psalm 93:1 says this, the Lord reigns. He is robed in majesty. The Lord is robed. He has put on strength as his belt. Yes, the world is established. It shall never be moved. Exodus 15:13 says, you have led in your steadfast love the people whom you have redeemed, for you have guided them by your strength to your holy abode. Job 9:19 says, if it is a contest of strength, behold, he is mighty. If it is a matter of justice, who can summon him? This is God. This is this strong, mighty, powerful God. This is this God that comes forward to Jacob in the visions and says, I'm the strong one. I'm God. I'm about to speak to you. And so God, Ha-El, calls and says, Jacob, Jacob. And Jacob said, here am I. Here am I. Such a simple response from Jacob, yet it has so much meaning. Genesis 22:11-12, but the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here I am. He said, do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son from me. 1 Samuel 3:4, then the Lord called Samuel and he said, here I am. Isaiah 6:8, and I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and who will go for us? Then I said, here I am, send me. Matthew 4:18-20. While walking by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who was called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. And immediately they left their nets and followed him. God is going to call upon you, and at one point in your life or another, God will call upon you, whether you like it or not, whether you're trying to avoid it or not, God will call upon your name. And do you say, as they do, here I am? Or do you hide, as Adam and Eve did in the garden? As God was wondering where they were, and he knew plainly where they were. They weren't hiding, but they didn't come forward and say, here I am, God. The mess we've gotten ourselves into. No one said they hid. They did not come forward and say, here I am. God requires you. God requires all of you. There's not a piece where God says, put this for yourself and take your time. And I know you need this little thing, so I'll let you have that. No, God requires all of you. As Jesus calls upon his disciples, they answer by following him. Immediately, it says. It wasn't a thought in their mind. They said, yeah, it's time to go. This is the call. This is the call upon my life from God. And here I go immediately. When God calls, we should have one response, and it should be, here I am. Do with me as you will. I'm yours. You've given me everything. What can't I give you? I want to give you my whole life. That's all you require. God then answers. And it seems the reason for Jacob's sacrifice, it is stated, I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will make you into a great nation. I myself will go down with you to Egypt, and I also will bring you up again. Joseph's hand shall close your eyes. Jacob was afraid. Jacob was afraid. And what was the reason? Well, we can infer that it might be because he's going to a foreign land with people who don't really like him. Or we can go back to what I previously said about maybe it's the promises that was made to him in Genesis 28, and he thinks he's going in the opposite direction of God. Or it could be either one or a combination of both. It doesn't really matter. The point is that Jacob was afraid. And God, understanding this, quelled Jacob's fears. He makes a promise. Jacob, I will make you into a great nation. God promises hold true, and he's not going to let this remnant die out. He understands what he told Jacob in 28. He says, I know those promises are going to be kept. I know those promises are still good. I'm not going to let your remnant die. I'm not going to let your family die. And on top of that, God let Jacob know, I myself will go down with you. Jacob, I am with you. What is there to be fearful of? You are mine. You are in my palm, and no harm shall come upon you. I will not leave you. Not only will you go and be with Joseph, but God makes a promise to Jacob, and Joseph's hand shall close your eyes. You know that boy who you haven't seen in 20 plus years? You know that boy who you thought was dead? You know that boy who you mourned for so long? Well, guess what? In fact, Joseph will be by your side at the very end as you take your last breath. Jacob will have his reunion with his son. How many of you know God like this morning? How many of you run to him in prayer in times of distress and in times of fear and in times of anguish and in times of anxiety? Or do you just do it because, well, that's a Christian thing to do, and I see my pastor do it, and I see my friend do it, so if something's going wrong, I got to go to him in prayer? Or do you go because you know that he's your God and he's your father and he knows that he has you? And there's nowhere else I'd rather go. As if I was a little boy and I hurt my arm and I run to my father. Or if I have joyful news and I run to my father and I say, I just want to share with you. I just want to be with you. That's all God wants. And yet here we are saying, no, I need to sheer away. I need to shriek away. I can't give you my all, God. Do you flounder as fear and anxiety creeps in? If you do, why? Oh, because I'm weak, because I'm a weak vessel. Yeah, you are. You're right, but God isn't. God's not a weak vessel. Christ is not unaware of what you're going through. Go to Hebrews. See our great high priest. See what he's been through. See the cross. Go to the Gospels. Christ is not unaware. Jesus did not say to these disciples, hey, drop everything, come follow me. And then as soon as, you know, a little bit of trepidation comes, a little bit of tribulation, I'm going to go ahead and step back. I'm going to let you guys just go out. I'm going to flee away and vanish. You can't find that anywhere. And yet so many of us struggle with fear and anxiety and uncertainty about what's going to come next. The idea of, I don't know my next step. I don't know what's going to come next. I need to feel like I'm in control. Why? Why do you need to be in control? God is the creator of the heavens and the earth. God has a plan from before the beginning of time to the end of creation, to the end of time. God has established everything. God has raised kings. God has put down kings. God has born you. God is going to see you when you take your last breath. And yet we say, but I need to control this life. I need to do this kind of stuff. And then as tribulation comes in, we understand, oh, I can't do things on my own. And then fear trip comes in and we say, I don't know what to do. I'd much rather have God in control of my steps than me in control of my steps. I'm just going to mess it all up. And that's what's important about this here I am that we see in verse 2, is there's no strings attached to it. This is Jacob coming to God fearful. This is Jacob coming to God with anxiety about what's next. And God doesn't say, well, Jacob, you got to go fix that first and then come back to me and then we'll figure out what you need to do. No, God says, I hear you. I know. But guess what? I'm going to be with you. I'm going to go down with you to Egypt. I'm going to bring you back to this land. I'm going to have your son, Joseph, be at your side and when you take your last breath. That's God. And what does he require? Here I am. Do with me as you will. Psalm 55:22. Cast your burden on the Lord and he will sustain you. He will never permit the righteous to be moved. Matthew 11:28-30. Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Hebrews 13:5-6. Keep your life free from love of money, and be content with what you have, for he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we can confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not fear. What can man do to me? In Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Those are people's favorite, that's someone's favorite psalm. There's a reason why that one gets read to someone as they're dying in the last breath, because it's comforting. It's a sense of, oh, it's God is close to me. We could have this feeling all the time. We could have this understanding of all these guys, they say, I will fear no evil. I will not fear. What can man do to me? Come to me, all who labor and heavy laden. It's like, we think these people are superheroes sometimes, I feel like. I know I do. I look at the Bible and I say, well, how am I supposed to do that? Well, they're a man, just like I am. And they have the same God that I have. And so for me, as I see this and I see Jacob again, I'm going to hit on again. Here I am. We see this confidence from Jacob of not shying away, not saying anything, just being like, here I am. I present myself before you. We could have that, and yet we struggle to, and why? Why do we struggle so bad to go, here I am. Is a mission that needs to be done? Here I am. Is a coworker that needs my help? Here I am. Is something in the church I need to do? Here I am. Here I am, God, whatever you need. Something to ponder. Verses 5-27. We get this long genealogy. After this vision took place, it seems as if there's an immediate shift for Jacob. He understands this is God's will for him to go now. You just see him leave Beersheba. He got the answers he was looking for. And now this is where I was struggling for quite a while. I'm not good with genealogies. It's hard for me to get into. Whenever I do my own Bible studies, I always look at the genealogies and I say, well, I'm just going to skip past that. I'm going to like read some of the names like real fast and then jump over and get back to the good stuff. And I never really understand what genealogies are there for. And I know it's a good line to see where Jesus comes from. And it's a good history of the church and the people. But it's always a hard one for me. So right now, I'm just going to give you one point about this section, this genealogy, what's going on here. This seems to be a section where the family of Israel flips almost. And what I mean is for the past 20 chapters, we've come alongside Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph and this family that we've been a part of. But here it's about to flip where it's no longer we're following a family, we're following the nation of Israel. This is Israel, God's people going forward now. Now they're going to be referred to as the nation of Israel instead of the Jacob and Isaac and Abraham. Yes, they're still a part of it, but it's now this nation of Israel going forward that we're going to follow in Exodus and Deuteronomy going forward and Judges all the way forward. So this is this flip that we get to here. And in the genealogy, it's presented that this Israel is going to switch into a nation because in verse 8, Moses states there are the names of the descendants of Israel who came into Egypt, Jacob and his sons. So as Moses is sharing and writing this genealogy for the people to hear and read, he makes it known this is Israel. This is Israel now. Because following that, we see Jacob and his sons. They're now under this umbrella of Israel. This is the remnant in which God kept for himself, is which God is keeping for himself. From this remnant, there is a line that leads toward Jesus from the tribe of Judah. This line that Moses may have not been aware of at the time, but God was. God surely was. And so as this genealogy was put in here, it's important to understand that for a while we have been dealing with families and these families going forward and going along with their journey. But it's now going to be switching to Israel as a nation as it broadens, as we see the ways in which kings are risen up and as we see them go into captivity and as we see them rescued out of captivity. The narrative shifts here in 46 a bit, especially as we get into Exodus and next books, we see this nation go forward of Israel, this nation. So with that, 28, getting into this reunion with Jacob and Joseph. Judah was sent ahead by Jacob to Joseph to show him before the way in Goshen. Now, I'm not going to dive too deep into Judah going forward and his leadership, because in a couple chapters, pastor's going to bring out the blessings that Jacob gives to his sons. And in there, you're going to be able to see truly why Judah becomes the line, what Jesus comes through. So I'm not going to dive too deep into why Judah was sent forward, but it's obvious that there's a trust here between Judah and Jacob now. There's a trust here for him to go forward, and a large part of it was probably due to the offering of himself in the previous chapters. Of saying, I'm going to exchange myself for Benjamin. Joseph, keep me instead of Benjamin. I'll stay here. I'll be a part of the land. I'll be in captivity. Whatever you need, just let Benjamin come out. And so I think there's now this established relationship between Jacob and Judah now. So Jacob, go ahead and trust Judah. Go forward and talk to Joseph, because surely he knows best where we're going to be. He's been a part of this land now for quite a while, and he's going to know where best to settle. So Judah, go along to Joseph and find out exactly where we're going to settle at. And so he tells Judah to go forward, and Judah goes forward and talks to Joseph, and we see it's Goshen. We see that's where they're going to settle. And a couple of verses, we're going to understand why they settle there. But first, I want to go to this reunion between Jacob and Joseph. A beautiful reunion. In verse 29, it says, then Joseph prepared his chariot and went up to meet Israel, his father, in Goshen. Now, let us remember, this is Joseph who is essentially right underneath Pharaoh. This chariot and this arrival would be glorious, would be magnificent. They would have people around, and this is a spectacle whenever Joseph is going to come out. And so you can imagine Joseph on the chariot ride over as he's going to meet his father, who he hasn't seen in decades. Wondering, has he thought about me? Does he still remember me? Of course he remembers me, but I don't know what's going to go on, what's going to happen. I have so much I want to tell him about what God did to me while I was away for 20 years. I want to tell him about my children. I want to tell him about everything. This is my father. This is who I'm so close to. They were as close as a father and son could be. When Jacob was made aware of Joseph's death in chapter 37, Jacob mourned many days, it said, and refused to be comforted. He said, no, I don't want to be comforted. He said, no, I shall go down to Sheol to my son mourning. This closeness and this love that they shared for one another was known by the whole family. And finally, decades later, they're going to be able to reunite, and both of them with anticipation, I'm sure, and both of them with wondering. And maybe even Jacob with a little bit of, is God promises going to be kept? And so we see, continuing to this verse of the reunion, it's shown to us. And it says, he presented himself to him and fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good while. No words spoken, no words needed. just embrace, just a time of embrace. So there's so much wanting to share, but no, this is just a time of, I've missed you so much. I missed my father. I miss being able to grow with you. I miss being able to do all that kind of stuff. I miss our talks, the long talks we would have. So you can imagine as they embrace, it's just, I never want to let go. I want to be here forever in your arms. And then Israel finally speaks to Joseph and says, now let me die since I have seen your face and know that you are alive. Relief. Jacob now can rest easy, and when the time comes, die peacefully, knowing that Joseph, my boy, my son, who I love so much, is alive. And again, a promise kept by God in verse 4, Joseph's hand shall close your eyes. You can imagine Jacob as well just saying, God is true, God is right, God keeps his promises, God knows his ways. This is a mighty God. Just an overflowing of emotions in this time. Praising God, loving his son. Just an amazing picture of a reunion that's been, they've been apart for so long. And to be brought back. So now getting back to Goshen, this place in which God has decided to have them go. Why is it this place? Why is, specifically is it Goshen? Well, Joseph lays out for his family why exactly it is. He says, I will go up and tell Pharaoh and will say to him, my brothers and my father's household who were in the land of Canaan have come to me. And the men are shepherds, for they have been keepers of livestock, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have. And when Pharaoh calls you and says, what is your occupation? You shall say, your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth even until now, both we and our fathers, in order that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians. So this place was chosen by Joseph, but more rightly chosen by God, because Israel would be separate from Egypt. This would be there would be no intermingling, there would be no chance of getting into their idols or gods or whatever that case may be. The land would provide for all their needs, they'd have everything that they needed there. And no Egyptian is going to come down because they're shepherds. I don't want to go where the shepherds are. They're nasty and ugly and disgusting. That's how the Egyptians thought of the shepherds and the Hebrews. They're something different. I don't want to go by them. So this idea of going to Goshen, this plan put in forth by God, was a way to be able to say, I'm going to keep you separate from Egypt. I'm going to keep you mine, and I'm going to grow you, and I'm going to nourish you, and I'm going to have you here for a time. God is bringing into motion his plans. And again, there's still a famine going on, so this relocation was necessary by God. He knows that there's still a famine going on. He knows this is still happening. So for now, I'm going to have you here, and Joseph's going to be able to provide for you, and you're going to have this land to be in. And then hundreds of years later, the nation will be brought back. Just keep reading through the Bible. Just go home and just keep reading and see how the nation gets brought back. Ensuring that God's promise to Jacob in chapter 28 will come to fruition. He didn't forget about the other part of coming back to the land. It's just a time that they're going to be here, and then God will enact his plan to bring them back through Moses to this land. So, a lot. What do we take home with us today? Turn with me to 1 Peter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2, 9 to 12. First Peter 2:9-12 says, but you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for his own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against you and your soul. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. What is this to know? We're now gods. We're no longer these people who are apart from God. No, now we are a chosen race. We're a royal priesthood. We're a holy nation. That's what we're called. And it says we weren't people once, but now we are God's people. We haven't received mercy, but now we have received mercy. And so being gods, what does being gods look like? Well, first of all, God's in control. So whatever his will is for your life, it will be done. If you are his, if you fight, if you tarry, whatever will he has for your life, because he needs it to be accomplished, will be accomplished. So how many of us are going to be as Jacob and call, and when God calls, we're going to say, here am I. God, here am I. Whatever you need for me, if you've called me in your word to be set apart, you've called me in your word to not act as the Gentiles do, but instead honorable, to not do as evildoers do, but instead to act honorable. God, what is it that you need from me? That simple word, here am I, leads into everything else in your life. Because it's that first call, that first time that Jesus called you to follow himself. He says, follow me. And did you say, absolutely. Right? We all have that honeymoon phase with Jesus in the very beginning. I want to go spread and shout in the streets to everyone about how great Jesus is. I want my neighbor to know. I want my family to know. I want everything to know. And then the trials and the tribulations come and it comes a little bit harder. And then work gets involved. And you know work. That's hard. And so many of us then begin to shy away from that love that we have, that willingness to do whatever we need to do for God, that willingness to offer our whole bodies, our whole lives to God. It starts with, here am I, but it goes on in verses 11 to 13. This is what we go forward with. Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your souls. Get that out of the way. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable. Why? So that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. We're set apart. Why? That God may be glorified. We need to have that first part of, here am I. But after that, we go into everything else. But it's got to start there. It's got to start with a willingness to say, God, take my life and do whatever you will with it. No matter the trials, no matter the tribulation, no matter the hate that I'm going to get. Because I know that you're with me. And you've promised me that I'm yours. You've promised me that I'm a royal priesthood now. Well, there's nothing to be feared. What can man do to me? Here am I. With that, let us sing and close in prayer.